Welcome everybody to another thrilling episode of HomeKit Insider. We have a really fun episode today, something a little bit different. So you've got me, Andrew O'Hara, here with my pal, and fun fact, the current land speed record holder for riding a wildebeest, Steven Robles. How you doing, man?
Doing well. I also hold the record for Tauntaun. Not many people know that. That's a secret.
Both of them are pretty well-known secrets.
That's right. That is true. But we are very excited today because we have a special guest, actually the Eve Systems brand manager. Eve, you've heard us talk about Eve on lots of episodes. We use lots of their devices. But the Eve Systems brand manager, Tim Booth, is joining us today. How's it going, Tim?
Pretty good. Thanks. Yeah, glad to be here.
Yeah, we're so glad to have you. And this was before the show, but I just need to brag that I got the pronunciation of Tim's name right to hopefully save all the mispronunciations from all the episodes before this. All right. Well, before we jump into the interview with Tim, just want to give a quick update. Andrew is working on his pantry. He's got a great tweet thread about all that he's doing in the pantry and setting up the lights. And so I'll put a link in the show notes to that tweet thread. You can see all the pictures. But Andrew, you want to give us a quick update about what's going on there?
Yeah, still making a lot of progress on it. I talked a little bit and kind of showed in the photos where we're going to mount those smart lights down the sides. We're going to run those across. We're pretty much ready to start putting the lights in. I just haven't actually picked up the light strips yet that I need. But once I grab those, we'll get that installed. I got all the spots for the wires run. Since the last time we talked, we've done a lot. We put in the slat wall along the back and the sides, as well as the partition in the center. And we're also, because I can't stop putting automation on things,
that's right,
I'm going to set up a light on the inside of this thing so that whenever the doors are open, the internal light is going to come on. So I got spaced around the power and everything and the additional cables. So we're going to put a contact sensor on there, as well as another light strip fixture along the whole top that should light up the inside of the pantry whenever the doors are open. So we're going to hope that that is a... I got to make sure I pick the right one here, because this isn't just like, you know, ambient lighting around the outside. This is like functional lighting that I need to actually light the pantry when the door is open. So it needs to be fast and responsive. So I'm going to try a couple things out and see what is quickest response time here. But this will be a little more challenging just because of how I need everything to work correctly and get proper placement of the contact sensors and stuff like that. We also had people throwing wrenches in my plan. Mr. Wesley Hilliard here at Apple Insider, he brought up, which I should have thought this because I had put Eve in my head. Dang it, Tim. I put the Hue outdoor light strip originally behind my desk, and the Hue outdoor light strip actually has a much bigger like diffuser around it, and it looked really nice because it got rid of some of the light streaks that a normal light strip would do when it's in close proximity to a flat surface. It looked really nice, and then I had started using like diffusers on a couple of my other light strips in similar situations, and Wes is like, why don't you put a diffuser on that so that way you don't have any, you know, harsh light coming out of that light strip? So now I'm trying to find in a very tight space what I can use for a diffuser. There's a couple actual diffuser shells that I can put around the light strips to kind of make it not so harsh going into the shelves themselves. Or I could just try to put essentially like a contact film or something on the light strip, and that should soften it up a little bit. But again, more tinkering, more random problems for me to worry about as I get to the actual installation and wiring of this guy. But if you guys care enough to follow along, like Steven said, there's a tweet thread that I've been publishing to every day or two as we complete more steps in our fancy HomeKit pantry.
Very cool. We'll check that link out in show notes. And now to Tim. Tim, we're so glad to have you, the Eve Systems brand manager. Maybe tell us how you got into the smart home world and what led you to actually working for Eve.
Yeah, so that's actually a pretty straightforward story for me, because I started off at Elgato back in the day, about 10 years ago. And that was a very, very different company back then. It was still the glorious ITV times when I started. And then we moved to different areas, basically. We created a pretty successful gaming brand, moving from the TV business, and then we looked at the landscape and actually found out that the smart home landscape was actually something that perfectly fit what we did every day. So what we did was use hardware and software and the combination of those to create something that makes sense and that works seamlessly together. And we saw great opportunity here in the smart home space. And then Apple came along and announced HomeKit. So that was pretty much a no-brainer for us, being very Apple-centric. And we were thrilled back in the day, just as we are today, about that ecosystem. And yeah, we're one of the first brands to have products on HomeKit back in the day, and continue to lead that space.
And you guys are kind of exclusively HomeKit, right? I mean, it's Apple, and that's about it. Do you guys ever think about broadening that, or is that pretty intentional?
That is absolutely intentional. We back in the day when we developed the whole smart home portfolio, we were really glad that Apple took on the role of providing a platform, because one of the very early problems was and continues to be that for all of this to make sense to the average customer, is it needs to work together. You can't be locked into one manufacturer's ecosystem. So even though we were pretty sure we have an awesome lineup of products here, they are much, much better when they work together with products of other companies. And HomeKit has pretty much shown that this is true. Back in the day, we had to convince people that HomeKit is a good thing, that this interoperability is something desirable. And now that's something you don't need to convince anybody anymore about, that it makes sense. We will never do certain products. We will never develop like self-opening and closing windows like they exist in the HomeKit ecosystem. And there are a bunch of examples where it just makes sense to have a large platform provider with other companies joining that. And then there's, of course, HomeKit isn't the only platform, but I think we'll get a little bit more into that later on. The values that HomeKit has and the overall system approach with privacy and system design is something we value a lot. And that is just with other platforms, they are not there just yet.
Right. So the big technology conference was all digital this year. I'm talking about CES 2021. And there's not usually a lot of Apple stuff for Apple people to get excited about, but there are smart home things. And we did see some HomeKit products. But Eve, I don't think you had anything there at CES. So A, what did you think of CES being all digital? And two, was there any reason why Eve didn't kind of release stuff in CES time?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. CES wasn't really an Eve thing this year. For us, CES has always been about like connecting to other players in the industry, to talking to you guys, for example, or talking to sales contacts and talking to customers on the show floor, and kind of that whole spirit of being in touch and being in one place at the same time. So that didn't really happen with the all digital version, and it was, of course, as we all know from the past year of having virtual meetings, it's just a different experience. And for us, CES was never about announcing some distant thing in the future, some vision, but rather about like being excited about current products we have and are going to have soon. So all of that together led us to like not take the opportunity for CES this year and rather go at our own pace. And I think for a lot of companies, you kind of saw it this year's CES event, that was kind of the path they took.
So Tim, we've already seen product updates from Eve. We've seen stuff from Nanoleaf, all starting to adopt Thread. And longtime listener of the show know that we've done deep dives on Thread, at least to a degree. A certain depth of the intricacies of Thread and why it's kind of beneficial. Do you want to give us kind of a refresher for anyone who's new to the show, or kind of what you think is most exciting about Thread and kind of where we're leading with that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I can go on and on about this, so stop me if it's too much, but we're really thrilled about Thread. And as I've said, we've been on HomeKit since day one, and you guys have done a great job of also explaining the benefits of Thread and where we come from, so to speak. And where we come from is basically having a choice between Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. And from our perspective, everything else was never really an option. We didn't want to have a manufacturer-specific bridge or like any technology that would lock you in and create legacy problems and all of that. So for us, it was really the decision between the two native technologies, Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. And we have products on both connectivity standards. And we always carefully chose what technology would be best for the use case of the product. And for many, almost all of our products, that was Bluetooth, because we have many battery-powered devices that kind of need this energy efficiency. Wi-Fi wasn't even an option. And even on some other products like our Eve Energy, our smart plug, we chose Bluetooth because we didn't want to have that energy consumption, that constant energy consumption in a home with like smart plugs. If you have 10 smart plugs that are supposed to save you energy by turning devices off, why would they need to consume a significant amount of energy themselves?
Especially on like the Eve Energy, which actually does monitor your consumption at the same time.
Exactly.
So you'd be like shooting yourself in the foot, like pointing out how much extra energy, you know, that Wi-Fi is using.
Exactly. So and it is it really depends, but it can be a tenfold energy consumption easily. And if you add that up with all the smart devices in your home, that's a lot of energy you're wasting. And Bluetooth is I know it has been perceived as being bad some of the times, but really for a lot of use cases, it's awesome. If you only have one or two or three Bluetooth smart plugs, you don't have any issues with response times and any of that. That starts to increase once you add more devices, more Bluetooth devices, because Bluetooth kind of has a limit of simultaneous connections. And once you start growing your setup with these kinds of devices, you start to notice the shortcomings more. But really, for many of our devices, that was the path we had to take to make products that make sense. And we've introduced devices such as Eve Extend for these more elaborate setups that would like solve these problems by bridging 8 Bluetooth devices to one Wi-Fi connection. So having sort of the best of both worlds. But really, the ultimate solution here is Thread, because Thread as a technology solves all of that. Naturally, it was developed for the smart home. It was the industry knows what currently happens, and they they know about these problems. Nobody is blind here. It was the status quo of technology, and that's what everybody used, and it was great. And of course, it had some limitations. But with all of that limitation in mind, Thread was created to solve basically all of that. And it has the best of everything. It has low latency, it's IP-based, you can have simultaneous connections all you want, you can have a mesh network, so not scattering around HomePods in your home anymore to get reliable individual connections. It's super energy efficient, so really for everything except high bandwidth applications, which would be cameras, for example, Thread is a no-brainer. It just works, and it works as intended, and no other technology can keep up here.
So just to get super nerdy for a second, because I realized just now, what exactly is Thread traveling on? Is it like a low megahertz frequency? Is it some other kind of wireless technology? Like, what is actually transferring the data?
So basically, as you might know, Thread is part of the Zigbee Alliance.
Right.
And the reason behind it is that it's basically, like, very abstractly speaking here, basically a new version of what's already there. So basically, if you know Zigbee, it has many of the same characteristics, like the range would be about the same, and because it's using the same radio technology here, just the protocol on top of it, all of that has been improved and revamped, and actually has incredible industry support here. So unlike Zigbee, which was supposed to be open and of course is open and has implementations where you can like mix and match different manufacturers' stuff. At the end of the day, what happened here is every manufacturer has a custom proprietary bridge. And you just can't add stuff from one manufacturer to another bridge and expect it to work in HomeKit, for example. And all of that doesn't happen with Thread.
So what is the range? So I have one of the Eve extends, and I use it kind of next to the, or adjacent to the wall to my backyard, because I have an Eve Aqua out there on a water spigot to open and close. Super cool. And that Eve extend works pretty well. I have terrible judgment of both pronunciation and distances, so I really don't know. But compared to like the Eve extend or traditional Zigbee, what's the kind of range we could expect from Thread device to Thread device?
So comparing it to Zigbee is probably here the best comparison, because it's probably about the same, I would say. Like with my HomeKit background, I haven't fiddled too much with like the specifics of Zigbee, to be honest. But what I can say is in my apartment, for example, I right now have a HomePod Mini like at the very other end of the apartment, and then the second HomePod Mini in that other corner. And that is a distance that would just be completely impossible to connect to for a Bluetooth device, and even Wi-Fi. I have to have a mesh Wi-Fi in my home to like cover the whole apartment. And with Thread, it just connects. It's just across the whole apartment, no problem. So I think what people are going to see here is a significant improvement of just never having to worry about that stuff again.
Awesome. So do you know of any upcoming Thread devices? If you want to talk about Eve devices, that would be incredible. But any other devices that you know of that are exciting, or you think that people should get their hands on to introduce them to Thread?
Well, that's a trick question here. Of course, I know about a bunch of upcoming devices, but as you might have guessed, I can't really talk about all of that. What I can say, and what we have already said when we launched the firmware updates for existing devices back in December, is that we are fully committed to ship updates for all of our products to enable Thread on those. So for some of them, they already have the hardware necessary, because you need hardware support to get on Thread. And we've planned well ahead. So there are devices such as Eve Aqua, for example, that launched, I think, in June of last year, that already have the hardware necessary to support Thread. So that is just everybody who bought an Eve Aqua after last June will at some point get a firmware update to enable Thread on that. And then, of course, we have a bunch of devices that don't yet have that hardware, but those will get updates, and we'll announce those when they are ready. But the path forward and our commitment is super clear here. We are fully on board with Thread.
So I have a question then. With Thread, it creates that mesh network. Is there like a benefit to building out the network with like additional nodes, even if just like adding those nodes aren't necessarily doing something specifically other than kind of extending the network? Like, would it make sense to build Thread into stationary objects in your house just so you can have like kind of extra points going around? Like if you had, you know, speakers or something. I know we're not necessarily going to transmit the audio. Obviously, cameras can't do video. But would it make sense just to have that there to keep kind of bridging that gap to additional Thread devices in your house? Or are we going to see manufacturers sticking to specific devices that are using it, like the plugs and sensors and all that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the second thing will happen, because there really isn't that much value in having something like a speaker being an additional Thread node, because you won't have a lack of Thread nodes going forward. I strongly believe that, let's say you have one Thread device in every room of your home, that's plenty. That's more than you would need for a really robust and reliable network. So I think the only instances where you need to think about Thread nodes and using those to extend your mesh networks are really edge cases, like, for example, Eve Aqua. So if you have a irrigation controller really far out in your garden, you may want to make sure that, similarly as you use Eve Extend today, that like close to your window, you might want to have some other thread device to have it connect to that EVE Aqua. But that is like the outside of your thread mesh network at the end of the day. But beyond that, I think there really isn't a need. Like a typical normal house is fine with having one thread node on each floor, for example.
Yeah, just one more thing. So just to make it crystal clear, so right now I have an EVE Extend going to my EVE Aqua, and I also have a HomePod Mini in the same room that the EVE Extend is. So once thread comes to that EVE Aqua, I should be able to disconnect the EVE Extend in that same room, and now my EVE Aqua will be connected via thread. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yes, that is right.
Awesome. That's sweet.
So we've just talked about all the fun thread stuff. Because EVE apparently is leading the pack in all of this. I know NanoLeaf also has stuff out there, but you guys have, you know, a ton of hardware that's already got this stuff in there, and you've already done a lot with your app. And even I prepped all my questions I was going to ask you, and even since then, there's been a new update to the EVE app that has even made additional changes. So we're like learning this kind of like on the fly, but what I'm talking about is the EVE app. You guys have done a bunch of updates recently. One of them is it's now available on the Mac. Well, I guess with an asterisk there, because it's available on M1 Macs. I guess before we even get to the new Thread Network stuff, why is the EVE app only available on like the Apple Silicon Macs versus any Intel Macs that are also running Big Sur?
Actually, because that was like this most straightforward path here in investing in the future, because there is a clear path of having iPad apps run on M1 Apple Silicon Macs. Companies just don't tick that box, because you kind of have to put work into it to optimize the app so it works well on a Mac, you know, with a mouse and keyboard and all of that and different frameworks. So you have to put a little bit of effort into making a nice Mac app. And there was a very, very clear path for that for Apple Silicon, completely backporting the Mac app to older Intel Macs is certainly possible, but incredibly more work from a development resource standpoint. And also, it's not the future. I think we've all seen from the perception of the new M1 Macs, everybody can't wait for more Apple Silicon computers to be available, and that will be a very, very quick transition going forward. So we kind of decided we spend our time and our resources into the future here, and that was the M1 Mac, and we were happy to ship that. But really, like, all the effort of porting it to the Mac is just for older machines, not the future, I think.
As a person who is using a Mac Pro and who does not want to buy a Mac Pro with any time in the really short term, I mean, it just came out like a year ago, you should hire an intern to make that happen because I would love to be able to run the EVE app on my Mac, and I love the M1. I mean, I've been using it for a little while. My Mac Pro has been in the repair, but yeah, I don't have any, you know, my daily driver is not an M1 Mac, and I don't plan to be, unfortunately, for a little while.
I definitely feel you. I'm on an Intel MacBook as well, so I feel your pain. But I think time is going to solve that, and it will be really, really beautiful. And if one intern can actually do that, I would hire that intern in a heartbeat, because it really is an incredible amount of work.
I mean, he's a really good intern. Mm-hmm. He or she would be a great intern. Yeah. I promise.
I will.
I like how Tim says time will solve it, which is basically saying Andrew will buy a new computer in the next year. Like, that's basically what means by solving.
That's what he's saying.
So the EVE app was recently updated with this cool area where you could see the thread network in your home. So can you explain a little bit to us what users will see in that thread network panel and why a HomePod Mini may or may not show up there?
Yeah, I'll be happy to. As you mentioned, there just has been another EVE app update with which improves this a little more. This is something we don't usually do this. This is kind of a, you look at our engineers working here at the end of the day. It's really close to our development. And usually when we ship something and release something, we make sure that it's polished and basically finished and has like all the details right. But here we thought, we kind of want to give everyone access to these tools that we have and to the development we make here. We have in the past year and more, while working with Threat and all of that, we have gathered a lot of insights and knowledge around this, and we kind of want to give everyone access to this. And there really isn't any other way to look at your threat network other than the Eve app right now and the tools we have built in here. So that's why you see like maybe a couple of rough edges here, but at the end of the day, it's already today a great tool to kind of gather understanding about your threat network. And we actually will release a blog update this week, a blog post that really goes into detail about what the terminology means here to kind of everyone who wants to understand what is happening should have the tools and the knowledge, and we will try to communicate a lot around this and kind of share what we have learned along the way. So that is all basically a work in progress, but already a great look behind the magic that Threat is. At the end of the day, it's supposed to be, and it's good that it's a black box. You kind of don't see your network configuring itself and doing stuff. You just, if you install a firmware update for a current Eve accessory, it's just on Threat after that, and you don't know what it's doing and why it's doing that. It just works, and that's beautiful. But I think there are some among us who kind of want to dig in and understand how it works. So that's why we have that feature in the Eve app.
I think that's good, because I know we got a lot of questions after Thread was really rolling out between the HomePod Mini and the NanoLeaf devices and the Eve announcements. And people were asking us how they knew if their devices were on Thread. And like you said, it should just be you do the update and now it's on Thread and you should just trust that. But even just from the high level point of view of being able to see your Thread network and seeing in fact that these listed devices are communicating on Thread, I think is beneficial. At least you kind of know that they're communicating on Thread. How come, you know, if your HomePod Mini is acting as that border router for Thread, why don't we see that one in the list? Like for me, I see my NanoLeaf devices, but I don't see my HomePod Minis.
That is actually a very, very technical problem here. So let me try to approach this. Basically, Threat is a completely different network from all the other networks you have. So you have your Wi-Fi network, and you might have Ethernet clients there, and that is basically your local IP home network. And the Threat network is completely separate from that. So you have one device in your Threat network that acts as a border router, which is the HomePod Mini today, and that basically translates all of that. So gets the one network connected to your existing network. And what we do in the Threat network view is we just look at that separate network and try to gather as much information as we can. And there really isn't a lot of information there. So one difference that is really important here is something that we here in Europe see that you currently don't, because we utilize Eve devices to gather more information about the network. So in Threat, you have devices that can act as a router. So they are nodes that can pass on data from other points in the network. And with an Eve device like that, we can kind of ask around and say, okay, what's happening? How is your connection quality here? And how are you called? And that sort of thing. And we currently use Eve Energy in Europe, which is already Threat enabled to kind of survey the network and display better information here. And that is, of course, something that is not yet available in the United States, for example. So that's, again, a thing time will solve at some point. I'm not saying too much here that obviously there will be threat-enabled EVE routers going forward, so mains-powered devices. And that will give you a much, much better level of information here. The HomePod Mini kind of is another edge case here, because on the threat network, you can kind of ask all you want, because it's not a HomeKit device that doesn't identify itself as being, hey, I'm a smart plug, I can turn things on and off. It doesn't have that level of information, so you kind of really don't know what it is, so we can't put a name to it.
That makes sense. At least people can feel assured that their HomePod Mini is still connecting over Thread.
Yeah, so it will show up at the very bottom of the view as just a router with like a little code, IP address derived code. But we kind of didn't want to go ahead and just call everything where we don't know what it is HomePod, because that, like, going forward, that's just not going to be true.
So the Thread Network view, by the way, for anyone who wasn't sure where this is, inside of the EVE app, assuming you're updated to one of the most recent versions, tap on that settings gear icon in the lower right-hand corner, and just there in your list on the top is Thread Network, and you can see your devices. So if I go into any of those, I was curious on what the sleep interval was and what would be a good time for that, kind of what people should be looking out for if they were just kind of looking at this and wondering, what do these things mean?
Yeah, I get you. There have been a lot of questions already, even on our social media channels and support, because I'm really excited that people want to know. So this is great that people care about this stuff and kind of want to understand it. I think that's brilliant. So the sleep interval is a characteristic. There are so-called sleepy end devices. They have a very, very picture painting terminology here. And what that means is it's a battery powered device at the end of the day that can go to sleep to preserve even more energy. And EVE Door and Window is one example of that, where you're probably seeing that information. EVE Door and Window can basically go to sleep and just check in with a router now node, which may be an EVE Energy or maybe a HomePod Mini, and kind of check back whether there's anything noteworthy in the network. Like, should I know anything? Has someone asked me to identify, or is there any communication for me? And then it can check, and then it can go back to sleep, and then check again. And the sleep interval basically just says, how long is this device configured to sleep? And for EVE Energy, that is 5 seconds, for example. So it goes to sleep 5 seconds, then asks again. And at any time, a device like this can also, of course, send stuff. So when you open a door, there's no need to wait for 5 seconds for that sleep interval. It will wake up immediately and send that notification immediately. That is just like for the passive checking in stuff. And that might be different for different devices and different manufacturers. That's basically a setting that the device can have. And there really isn't a good or bad here. I think the whole system design is that it just works flawlessly, and it can be optimized for battery life considerations, for example.
Very cool. Well, at the end of every episode, we try to hit some listener questions, and some of them actually you might be able to help us with, Tim. So we're going to hit this first one, and it's actually a listener on Twitter. David was asking us about the security of third-party apps accessing your home data. And so when you install an app for a HomeKit device like EVE or a lot of the other apps that we've talked about, one of the things it asks you as soon as you open up is allow access to home data, because that app wants or needs to be able to control your different home devices if you actually want to use it for something. So what are the security implications of that? And we could say, for instance, like the EVE app, Tim, when someone says allow access to home data, What kind of privacy barriers does that have? Can they see like patterns or other information? Or is it really just looking at your devices and scenes and controlling those plus automation? And maybe how does it compare to like Google Home, Amazon, and the other guys?
Oh, yeah, that's a brilliant question, because that is exactly the topic that why we are on HomeKit right now. Because this is very, very gated by Apple, and rightfully so. So first of all, you get that prompt. If the customer doesn't say yes or no, if he doesn't say yes, the app won't get anything. And then when there's the approval to access that data, there are still strict limitations as to what's possible and what can be done here. So there's the first stage here is, of course, again, the Apple approval process. So they have their guidelines, and like as a manufacturer, you can't just take that data and put it somewhere else. That's not allowed. So you will get in trouble if you do that. And I'm not aware of anyone even trying that. But you might still argue, okay, approval process, certification. What if something slips through? In that case, the system design really prevents any abuse still, because the only point where you can access that home data right then when your app is running in the foreground. So you open the Eve app, it has access to your home data, and then when it is open, it can check in what's the temperature in my living room. And that is only the current value. That is not some past value, so you can't get a pattern from that. So you really need to constantly look at the current values. As soon as an app is in the background, it's done with accessing that data. There is just no way to get home data in the background, which is very positive from a system design perspective. For some of our products, it's inconvenient, because for Eve Room, for example, there is no way for us to check for air quality in the background and surface a notification when it gets bad. That is just... We would do that if that was possible. It would be only local in our case, so we wouldn't share that with anyone. But even that is just technically not possible. So I think the whole HomeKit design here is very, very privacy-centric. I think there was another part of the question of whether a company could see of whether you're home or not. That, again, is completely handled by iOS or iPadOS. And the Find My Location service. So there, as an app with home data access, you don't see any of that. So I think that's very good. From our point of view, that's very good, because our business is not looking at customers' data. We don't want to see it. We don't want to know it. So I think from a system privacy design, that's really amazing. That is, of course, only the HomeKit side of things. So one consideration that is probably really important here is that all of that doesn't matter if you have an accessory that has some sort of parallel communication. So you can have a Wi-Fi device or a device with a bridge. Outside of HomeKit, those devices can do whatever they want, and they usually do. So there's, I don't know if you guys have covered this in the past, tools like the IoT Inspector, which is a project from Stanford University that kind of let you look at what your accessories communicate. And pretty much every accessory calls home and sends data to some mothership and like spills all of that data. So you might be safe on the HomeKit side of things. It's also important to look like at each accessory's behavior of what they communicate alongside HomeKit. And that is the problem. Problem is a strong word, but that is why we aren't on Google and and Amazon right now, because the system setup here is completely different. So for those devices, it is necessary. You have to have cloud-to-cloud connectivity. So what happens if you tell Siri to turn something on? It will send your voice data to the cloud for processing, send it back, and then locally turn that thing on. If you tell that to an Amazon or Google device, that will be sent to the cloud. And then that cloud talks to the manufacturer's cloud. And the manufacturer's cloud then tells your smart plug to turn on. So even if nobody here has any interest in monetizing that data or storing that data, it will, by design, pass through the outside, through some cloud. And that is not only a security thing, but of course also a privacy thing here. So Apple has very strong beliefs on data minimization, and that really shows here, I think.
So aside from making a clear case for the devices, I think you also made a strong case of why people need HomeKit routers. I think we talked about that a little bit when we did talk more in-depth about HomeKit routers. You know, there's been a couple of them at the hit the market, but they do basically that. Like you're saying, you know, when they're sending up that additional data to the manufacturer servers or whatever else it's doing, HomeKit routers lock that down and prevent it only locally, only, you know, firmware servers or full exactly. internet access.
Yeah.
So I think people will start to kind of realize why HomeKit routers may be important to their privacy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sorry, this wasn't meant to be an Eve ad. Like, I'm happy for every other company that is on HomeKit, and there are some great companies out there doing amazing stuff. So I'm not at all saying just buy Eve stuff. I'm basically saying, because this topic is very, very dear to our heart. If stuff like privacy and security is important to you, and I think for many people in the Apple ecosystem, these may be important things, then it's complicated to like grasp all of that and to make conscious buying decisions here. It's difficult.
All right. Well, one of this next questions, this is not so much Eve or Thread related, but someone was asking if it was possible to create a HomeKit automation. This is Bendik on Twitter. Create a HomeKit automation where my HomePod turns on the lights, wishes me a good morning, tells me what the weather is like, informs me of when I have to drive to reach work in time, taking traffic into consideration, and all that. And you can absolutely do this. Trying to explain all the steps like needed to create an automation like this would be difficult to do in audio, but I'll include a link in the show notes to one of these kinds of shortcuts where it'll tell you the meetings you have that day, what the weather is for that day, a place to put your work address and find out what the travel time will be. There's lots of different kinds of these morning routine shortcuts out there, and so I'll put a couple of them in the show notes, but you could download that shortcut to your phone, and then if you use it as a personal automation, or and if you set your HomePods where it can recognize your voice and launch your shortcuts, just name your shortcut whatever it is you want to say in the morning, like morning routine, or you could say, hey, SIRI, morning routine, and it will do everything within that shortcut, like reading you your meetings, telling you the weather, travel time to work, and all that. So it's absolutely possible. I'll put a couple of those shortcut options in the show notes.
So David had a couple minor ones here just to touch on quickly. He uses his HomePod mini or his HomePod to set a lot of scenes and stuff with HomeKit. Makes sense. He thinks the scene is set is too generic from Siri on the HomePod. And unfortunately, as far as I know, you cannot change the responses. Occasionally, I get different answers from her when I'm setting a scene, but really, you cannot control what she says in her confirmations. So not much going on there. Another thing where he's having a problem with disconnecting podcasts and stuff, without going into the full details of the question, it just seems like a random idiosyncrasy that's not working. So the one thing that I have with me with audio sometimes is like and my wife has this happen to her all the time. She'll like pause a podcast or something and then it'll just stop. And then she goes to like replay it, but it's been like 30 seconds and it completely forgot that it was playing audio and drops down, she has to go back into it and then recast it to the HomePod, and it's a whole pain in the butt. So there are random problems, it seems, with kind of audio and the HomePods. I don't know if it's in the AirPlay spec or something else, but how do I keep this from happening? I don't know. Complain to Apple loudly or something and see if that gets anywhere. But I don't have a specific way why that's happening or how to kind of prevent it from happening.
Right. All right. Well, Tim, thanks so much for joining us on this week's episode. If there's anything you would like our listeners to go check out, we'll put the link, obviously, to evehome.com, where you can learn about all the Eve products. But anything else you'd like to tell our listeners?
No, I was very happy to be here. And like I said, if you really want to dive into the whole threat terminology stuff, there will be a link in the description, I guess, to our blog article, which is coming out very soon. And that really gives you, written by our engineering team, like the complete deep dive into threat terminology, how it all works, and in combination with a threat network view in the app, I think that's really a great place to dig in here and learn more about threat. I don't know if you could tell, I'm pretty excited about threat. It's pretty amazing.
I think we're all excited about threat. Especially those of us, you know, like you, Tim, who have been around in the space since like the beginning of HomeKit, where honestly, I don't know how you guys made it through the early days of HomeKit because Bluetooth was such a pain in the butt. There was so much lag, and I'm sitting through like dev sessions at DubDub, and I'm like, yes, come on, Bluetooth changes to HomeKit. And like the app, Apple did it. Apple did fix a lot of those issues for quite a while, and they're still, you know, showing the benefits today. But Thread is just such a game changer. In many regards. So yeah, we're stoked that everyone's kind of going there.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I mean, time feels slow if you're like dealing with this on a daily basis, and you kind of wish, oh, couldn't they do this and couldn't they do that? But like stepping back for a minute here, like 5 years ago, we were super happy that we could tell Siri to turn something on. And that was like the use case. That was why you would buy that device, because that was super awesome. And they have just, the whole Bluetooth connectivity has been massively improved. You have notifications. The home app wasn't even there at the very beginning of HomeKit. So
that's right.
You have it in Control Center. It just gathered so much features and is much more refined already after only a couple of years at the end of the day. So I think with Thread and all the developments coming now, it's just going to be great.
This was awesome. We have so many more questions for you, Tim, but we will hold that off. Maybe we'll have you back in the future. But thanks again for hanging out.
I'm happy to join another time. Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, again, you can find links to Eve in the show notes and to that shortcut. Listeners, keep sending your questions at Andrew and myself. You can find us on Twitter. Twitter handles are in the show notes. Don't forget to give us a 5-20 star rating in Apple Podcasts, whatever you'd like. There's been lots of you doing that every week, and we appreciate it. Don't forget to check out Apple Insider Daily. Every day, the top Apple headlines in just a few minutes. And the Apple Insider Podcast comes out every Friday. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you next time.